The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, again, good evening, everyone, and who's watching and listening to this Monday night talk at IMC. And beginning of the year, I started a series of talks on Introduction to Buddhism. And for the time being, those are been put aside because it feels more appropriate to address the situation that all of us find ourselves in, the pandemic, which is traveling around the world and disrupting so much of human life. And so for this evening, I would like to talk about fear. And it seems like a topical theme right now because there's a tremendous amount of anxiety, fear. Some people, how they're feeling can be described as dread. One person I know has described the life she's living now is anticipating that it is in slow motion, an invisible tsunami is coming. And so how do we live with anxiety, with fear, with worry, with dread? This is really a good question for everyone, for human beings, that fear is one of the core Buddhist human emotions and feelings and motivations, and that to bring our practice of mindfulness to fear is one of the great tasks of mindfulness. Not to see fear as a mistake or even as a problem, but to see it as something that's worthy, respect-worthy of our care, our attention, our mindfulness. I think it's interesting that Buddhist psychology, ancient Buddhist psychology, will divide up much of the emotional life, the motivational life, the what we do and how we live, into two categories, into those aspects which are skillful and those aspects which are unskillful. Some people translate it as wholesome or unwholesome. Sometimes I like to think of it as healthy and unhealthy, or helpful and unhelpful. And sometimes it's this unskillful side, unwholesome side, is kind of in simple terms. Sometimes it's often considered to be the bad part. Things like hostility and hatred, lust and greed. Are considered unskillful and not useful and unhealthy for people. What's interesting is that fear is never considered in this category. It's never considered to be somehow bad, unskillful, unwholesome. I'm never familiar of it really being put in the wholesome side particularly. There is some exceptions that have to do around conscience that makes us ethical, the fear of causing harm. But generally, things like anxiety, fear, dread, are not put into a class of emotions that Buddhist practice is supposed to uproot. The language of uprooting is not using, letting go of it, overcoming it. It's generally not used for the talking about fear. And one simple way of understanding that is fear is multifaceted. There are appropriate fears to have, healthy fears to have, and there are ones that are debilitating and maybe limit our lives, sometimes a little bit, sometimes a great amount. But this idea of not putting fear in the kind of negative camp, I think is very important to understand, that it's not bad that we're afraid. It's not like we're a bad person. It's not morally wrong. It doesn't make us a bad person, doesn't make us a wrong person to be afraid. It comes with being a human being that we're afraid. I'm pretty, the great, great, great majority of people have some fear, some anxiety that they have. And sooner or later it'll appear. And what is it that makes people anxious? I've seen long lists of things that people are afraid of. And sometimes I think in shorthand, it's just life. Life can be dangerous. Life can be frightening. And so to just say fear comes with the territory, comes with being a human being. Sometimes it's intense, sometimes it's mild. And that, and what's the issue? The real kind of, I think, the problem with fear is not fear itself, but rather what's associated with the fear, how we behave because of the fear. Some people's strategy when they feel afraid is to get angry and to blame and attack. Some people, when they're afraid, collapse. Some people run away. One of the kind of unhelpful ways of relating to fear is the ostrich strategy of putting my head in the sand and, pretending there's nothing there. I've done that sometimes in my life, and it doesn't really work as a good strategy. But, what do we do with the fear? How do we behave because of it? And some of the behavior that comes out of fear, some of the secondary emotions, secondary judgments and ideas, reactions, that's where we start having greater problems with fear. But fear itself, we don't have to be afraid of. Fear ourself is not really a problem so much in and of itself. The reactivity, the impact that the way we live with it might be. And I say this maybe in a little bit clumsy way of emphasizing that in this mindfulness practice, the idea is to respect our fear and to get to know it, to learn how to live with the fear, to learn how to let it accompany us but not to limit us, to learn how to study our fear, to learn its wisdom. Fear sometimes is a very good indication that something is dangerous, that something is wrong, or something is problematic. And sometimes it's good to listen to that. Sometimes the sense of danger that comes from fear, the threat that we feel, sometimes is not real. Sometimes it's completely imaginary and it has nothing to do with anything that's real. It's kind of maybe a conditioning. It's a habit we carry with us and we imagine scenarios. Remember when I was a kid, falling asleep sometimes, I had all kinds of imaginations of the dangers that were lurking all around. My mind was kind of vivid. And I remember when I was, 10 or 11 or something, and my parents went away for the evening and went to bed by myself. But I wouldn't go to bed. I would peer out the window into the dark. Because just to see what monster, what looming thing was coming my way and what I had to be concerned about. And, there was nothing out there, it turned out, but my fantasy life certainly painted a big picture of what was out there. And so in mindfulness practice, the idea is to respect it, to study it, get to know it. But it can be hard to do that. And sometimes fear is a little bit like touching a hot electric wire, so it's just too much to get close to it. One of the good ways of beginning the study of fear is to begin talking about it. Talking with friends, people you trust, talk with strangers that look like they're trustable, maybe. Begin to normalize the experience of fear that we carry with us and have, and begin talking about it. Nowadays, many people are sheltered in place, and some people have a lot of time. They're just home all the time. And or spending time on the phone with friends or Zooming with friends or maybe family members that you're with a lot. If it's appropriate for the people you're with, You might engage, start having conversations about fear. Maybe not about the deepest fears and most difficult things you have, but start with a very safe and general topic of fear, there's a number of questions you could ask each other or answer. You could just very generally talk about how is your general way of experiencing fear. How do you experience it in your body? How do you experience it with your beliefs? How receptive are you to fear? How close are you? Do you let fear get to you? And you know, what's your attitude towards the fear? And do you get angry? Do you get afraid of fear? Do you feel you have an attitude that this is wrong? It's somehow you're a mistake because you're afraid. Are you embarrassed because of it? What goes on? What's the experience of fear like for you? It's interesting to talk about what you think the threat is. Fear usually comes because we feel threatened. So two things about threat. You can just talk a little bit about what are some of the various things you feel threatened by. And sometimes it's not really obvious, or not the obvious thing. Not a few people I've talked to who are afraid of dying. It turns out they're not afraid of the actual dying and no longer being alive. What they're afraid of is the pain they're afraid of experiencing as they die, the challenge and difficulty of that process. So that's kind of a difference, big difference between just being afraid of no longer existing, perhaps, versus going through some challenging phase of life in the process of dying. What's the threat? Where's the threat coming from? What are some of the threats that we kind of often trigger us? But even more interesting sometimes is to ask the question, what inside of us is threatenable? What is it inside of us that's being threatened? Just like in insight meditation, we try to avoid language like "I'm afraid," because that's kind of like a big general statement that kind of makes you kind of the assumption is who you are is you're afraid. You are fear. I am afraid. In insight meditation, we tend to frame the experience of something like fear by saying there's fear here. There's fear within me. And that way is not the whole picture of who we are. And sometimes you can get a little bit more distance or hold it a little bit more in context if you kind of change the language of how we see the fear. So the same thing, but when we talk about what's threatenable inside of us, what is being threatened? Because if you just generic fear, anxiety, I'm afraid and it's dangerous out there, it's kind of like all of me, who I am, is being threatened. But what specifically is being threatened in there? Is it your sense of security? Is it your comfort? Is it your life? Is it your sense of you're threatened because you feel the danger of fear? Is it your pride? Is it your survival? Is it your a limitation in your freedom to go hang out with your friends or do whatever you want? Or what is it particularly that what is it that's being threatened by the assumed or the real threats out there? So these kind of conversations you can have with people, they can be kind of broad, they can be kind of far out in the edges of fear, just kind of talking about it in the abstract, just to begin normalizing it. Another question you can ask what behaviors do you have that come out of the fear? What are the secondary reactions or responses or ways of being that come from you when you're afraid? Different people tend to have different kind of patterns about how they behave when they're afraid. And what is your way? So maybe to have those conversations, as I keep saying, in maybe abstract ways, kind of comfortable ways, theoretical ways, maybe even intellectual ways. But the idea is to begin to normalize and be comfortable talking about fear. Be comfortable sharing one's fears, one's little fears, big fears, with one's friends, with people that you trust. And this normalizing of it can start making it easier for us to be willing to show up and be present for our fear. And give us pause before we get reactive, before we get caught up in it, before we do something, behave in ways with the fear that we, you know, not so useful. Or it helps us not be afraid of the fear or embarrassed that we're afraid. Just, oh, there it is. There's my old friend. There's my companion, fear. There it is again. Yep, there I'm afraid. I'm anxious. So it becomes a little bit more normal, a little bit more ordinary, not such a big thing. Then, when we do the mindfulness practice, say we sit in meditation, that's a very wonderful place to begin tapping in, touching into the fears that we carry. And when we have like this pandemic going around, this is a particularly useful time for mindfulness to touch in. Partly because, you know, certainly it's helpful because it calms us down, it tends to relax some of the ruminations, some of the fantasies and ideas that we're spinning, that we're kind of talking ourselves into being more and more afraid and anxious about things. It just calms things down, makes us, maybe some of this fear dissipate and makes us a little bit more stable, certainly. But also there's a deeper opportunity, and that is the stronger the anxiety and the dread, the fear is about the pandemic, it often stirs up ancient fears. It stirs up whole other layers of our things that make us afraid, how we've been afraid in the past, how fear from old experiences still lives in us, and it's kind of been reawakened. And it becomes kind of not just the particular fear of the pandemic, but it sometimes can, you know, our feelings can be the sum total of fear, all the fears we've carried in our life come pouring out, triggered by something like this pandemic is going on now. So something like that can happen. And the advantage of what's the opportunity of mindfulness is to begin to touch some of these things, to address some of these things, maybe even to heal some of these unresolved fears that we carry, to begin finding a different relationship and how to hold them, how to hold them with a lot of compassion and care, how not to be at war or be critical of ourselves or the fear, but to learn how to hold it gently. And one of the great tasks in mindfulness practice about how to be mindful of fear is to bring a kind of attention to the fear, a kind of presence to the fear, that we're helping the fear feel safe. Many times the way we react to fear, if I was my fear, living with how in the past I used to react to my fear, I'd be even more afraid. It's so uncomfortable, the way I talk to myself. I used to talk to myself, and the way I'd push it down or try to hide it or deny it, or the ways in which I would get angry because I was my fear had been triggered. And I'd be angry at the fear, I'd be angry at myself. There's a whole slew of kind of things that I would do that would make the fear feel more afraid, and more to be afraid of. And mindfulness practice is to go in the opposite direction. It's to go, in a sense, towards the fear with a kind regard. To go towards the fear with being a safe person, safe attention for the fear. Now, this is not an easy thing to do. There are times when that's quite hard. But sometimes it's possible to start way out on the edges, to kind of imagine you're standing far, far away from the fear. And I know one teacher who taught this, I would say, imagine that you're standing up on a hillside far in the distance. And then can you look back at the fear now and feel like it's okay just to be there with it? And I remember one person said, no, that's still too close. And the teacher said, well, then it's not the hilltop over there, it's the mountain far, far across the Central Valley. And the person said, oh, and then I can turn back and look at the fear. So whatever distance you kind of need to kind of just kind of let it be there, kind of be aware of it, as opposed to run away or close down or collapse or something, just to hold it there so that you don't have to be threatened up by it, and so you're not threatening it. And then over time, you can get closer and closer. And the image that I like for being with fear is to that the awareness, the mindfulness, is like cupping your hands together, like making a bowl, a cup in your hands, and then coming from underneath and just holding the fear. And where do you hold the fear? Wherever you feel it most strongly in your body. Strong fear and anxiety usually has manifested sometimes as tension, as energies, as sensations, tightness, pulling, all kinds of things in the body. And then to come and just feel it, hold it. And sometimes if it's too difficult to get close to it, you can imagine that your hands are holding soft cotton balls. And you just kind of gently tap the fear and then pull away. Just get close and just tap it gently, softly, and then pull away. Just to kind of be close to it and begin letting it know that you're there, you care for it, you're allowing it to be there. And with a lot of patience and a lot of time. And then to begin kind of getting closer and just feel, allow it to feel, be what's there, and really feel the sensations of fear. One of the advantages of being in the body of sensations with fear is that the sensations are not the story. If we go into the story about what we're afraid of, it's all too easy for the rumination of that to trigger and spin out more fear. So part of the function of meditation is to quiet the stories just enough so that we can be and feel and be with the fear. Now, doing this in meditation is a particularly useful place to do it, because hopefully when you sit to meditate, you're safe enough for this time. Nothing needs to be done. You don't have to fend off dangers while you're meditating. So it's meant to be a time when it's safe to be with fear without solving it, to be with it and feel it without pushing it away. So acknowledge it, feel it, and then hold it gently. Or if you can't really hold it gently, a very important part of this study of fear is then to become aware of your relationship to the fear. What is the ways in which you relate to it? You might have aversion. You might have fear of fear. You might have, wanted to escape and close down. And those are the things that need our attention. I've worked with people who are afraid and they couldn't get close to the fear. And I asked them, instead of really connecting with the fear, to connect with the fear of the fear. And they said, yeah, I can do that. And so then they kind of held an awareness their fear of their fear for a while, and then that fear would kind of dissipate. And then I would ask them, now maybe you can feel your fear. And then it was easier to be closer to it. As the fear calms down, as we hold it gently, as we learn to let it be there without it being disturbing for us, fear can become our companion. We can kind of go through the life with fear, and with some fear, some anxiety, it doesn't limit us. We can do what we want to do, what we need to do, acknowledging it's there. That's a tall order to really learn how to do that, but that's one of the benefits that can come if you practice with fear, practice with anxiety. And this idea that you are going to practice with fear, bring mindfulness and be mindful of it, is really a powerful stance. It's a powerful form of strength and courage. It's a decision to not let business be as usual, not let the old habits to exist. It's a decision not to collapse in fear or have the habitual relationship with fear. It's a kind of a decision to be somewhat independent of the fear, to be in a certain way a little bit free of the fear, so we can look at it with kind eyes, so we can look at it with free eyes. We can see that there's fear, but we're not afraid. We can see the fear there, but it doesn't have to take over our mind, or our heart, our stomach. Just there it is. As we go deeper and deeper into the fear and learn how to be with it, begin to not have it have the upper hand, learn how to be, live our life without being limited by the fear, this is also an opportune time to begin looking more deeply, ask even deeper questions. What is it that's threatenable? What is it that's being threatened inside by the danger we are assuming that's there? And it's possible that even more deeply than the fear inside of us is a place, someplace inside of tenderness, of vulnerability, of something like that, that's maybe soft inside of us, that normally is not afraid, but it's vulnerable or tender, or that is a little movement of belief or attachment that somehow is the source of the fear. And to really drop down and be able to be quiet and still and not be agitated at all around fear, just feel it and feel deeper in and kind of feel our way to underlying what's deeper and deeper. It's fascinating what we can discover about ourselves. Some of it is parts of ourselves that are quite wonderful and nice to be connected with, and nice to learn how to be with and support it and learn how to carry that vulnerability or the love or the care that has been hurt or has been closed down. Be able to be wise and have street smarts of how to walk in the world with love or care or tenderness. Some of what we might find inside is maybe not so salutary. Some of it might be we're attached to a particular idea of who we are, and it's so important that we be that kind of person in the eyes of other people. And the reason why we get threatened so easily and why we're afraid is we're afraid people are not going to like us, people are going to reject us, people are not going to see us in the way that we want to be seen. And perhaps some of the identities we get attached to, some of the identities we form, are not really so useful to have. And if those are underneath the layers of fear, then mindfulness practice is meant to address those and to see those without shame, without criticism, but really to hold those with kindness. See them as kind of a place that's frozen inside, perhaps, something that's iced over. And then we hold it in the warmth of our attention so it can thaw and relax and show some other parts of ourselves. So fear is worthy of our mindfulness practice. There's nothing inherently wrong with being afraid. Fear has wisdom in it. And we can tap into that wisdom, if it's there, better if we're relaxed and calm about the fear. Fear is a really valuable part of growing, developing a spiritual life. To investigate it, get under the roots of it, to really kind of learn to kind of grow, be with it, and find something deeper. And sometimes a spiritual life, like mindfulness Buddhist practice itself, comes to a period where there's fear. It isn't the pandemic that's coming along. It's something about the spiritual growth that's frightening in and of itself for some people. So sooner or later, fear becomes a really important object, really important thing for study and to care and pay attention to. And for those of us, those of you, and I include myself, that to the degree that we have some anxiety, some fear, and this pandemic and the economic impact and the social impact and the health impact it has on ourselves and our loved ones and friends, to the degree to which that's impacted us with fear, it's really a great opportunity for mindfulness practice. And it might actually be the opportune time to meditate. It might be one of the best things you can do to begin getting developing a whole different relationship to fear. So whether it's conversations you're having with friends, or whether it's quiet time you spend with yourself reflecting or journaling about your fear, or whether it's sitting in meditation and really kind of finding a whole radical different way of holding it and being with it. Fear is a wonderful thing to study. And then finally, they say in Buddhism that one of the great gifts a person can give others is the gift of fearlessness. And I interpret that to be two kinds of gifts. One is that others don't have to be afraid of us. But the other is the gift of having people experience someone who has no fear or doesn't operate from the fear that they have. To experience the fearlessness in another person, the calm, the subtleness, is a gift. It helps other people relax. It helps other people feel like it's okay and it's safe and they can get their bearings on what's going on. And I hope that this mindfulness practice and meditation can help all of us to become fearless in both ways. That we become people other people don't have to be afraid of, and that the degree to which we become fearless without fear, that we become a refuge for other people, so that in this difficult time that many people are in now, that we become a beacon and a pillar of support, of safety, of calm, that helps all of us be calmer and wiser as we go through the pandemic times. So thank you very much, and thank you for being here this evening and listening, and I look forward to our next opportunities together. Thank you.